Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Great. Thank you, MOTAT, and welcome, Marcus. So, should we jump into what topics we've got today? With this first one here, the expanding universe, you're going to have to help me out a bit here because it's quite technical, but I understand that we've got some new data on the expanding rate of the universe, but it really fails to tell us anything helpful.
It doesn't tell us anything new, and it doesn't really solve a pretty big problem that we have. So, if you didn't know, the universe is expanding, and that really just means that the distance between stars and galaxies and everything is just getting bigger and bigger. So we're getting further away from everything else in the universe. But the rate, so the speed of that expansion, how fast things are moving away from us, is a quantity that is really important in cosmology. You know, we want to understand the fate of the universe and everything that led up to that. But it's a number that is difficult, really difficult to obtain. The famous U.S. astronomer Edwin Hubble in the 20th century came up with his Hubble constant, which is was the first sort of attempt at understanding how quickly stars are moving away from us. And there's been a lot of work since then to try and narrow that rate down. And it's come down to really two camps. There is the sort of the traditionalists who look at what are called standard candles. These are objects in the sky that have a known brightness. So if you know the brightness of something, you can figure out how bright it would appear to you at a certain distance. Because if you imagine light is moving out in all directions and it gets dimmer and dimmer as the further away it gets. And so they use these standard candles in the universe, these are particular types of stars that are a known brightness, to figure out how fast things are moving away from us. And so they get a number, and everyone was happy about that, until people started looking at a different set of data. And these data were related to really is the afterglow of the Big Bang. So about 13 and a bit billion years ago, the universe was created in this big, massive explosion. And there is still remnants of that explosion that are streaming through the universe at the moment. And we can measure it. And these are microwave radiation that sort of streaming around the sky. And we can measure very, very slight variations in its intensity, you know, looking up across the sky. And these variations reveal that regions of the early universe differed slightly in temperature. And we're talking about less than 0.03 of a degree differences in temperature. But these very, very slight differences can tell us a lot about how the universe has formed and how quickly it's moving away and the stars and galaxies are moving away from us.
And so that was the kind of research that was used in this.
That's right. And so there was a few years ago, there was a big measurement using a space telescope of this, and they got this number. This number disagreed with the traditional number by actually a not insignificant margin. And so they've done another measurement of this using a different telescope, now an Earth-bound telescope in Chile, in the Atacama, and they have come up with another number which agrees with the space-bound measurement very, very well. So this sort of is a good indication that whatever they're measuring, they've measured it well and they measured it accurately, and it's giving the same result. But it differs by about 10%. In the speed that galaxies and planets and stars and things are moving away from us. And so there is still this big unknown. Either we're doing something wrong, we don't understand everything completely, or there's something that just the scientists haven't yet thought of in terms of why these two measurements would be different. And so this is a big sort of mystery about why we can't predict or understand the expanding universe.
Do we know for certain that it's expanding at the same rate all the time and in all the places at once?
That's a very good question. The likelihood it isn't expanding at the same rate. It's actually starting to expand faster and faster and faster.
Right.
So it's actually the stars are moving away from it. They're accelerating away from us, and the reasons for that are mysterious and we don't understand them fully, but it seems like theory predicts at least that, that stars are moving away, they're accelerating away from us.
Something I thought really interesting was that it doesn't seem to be the case where improving technology can help us in solving this problem, because as the article mentioned, the more precise the measurements get, the more significant the inconsistency actually becomes. So is this just a case where we will never know the answer?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think we're going to figure this out at some point. And, you know, my feeling is that there is something going on here that we just don't understand. And it's up to the cosmologists and the astronomers and the astrophysicists to figure this one out.
Do you have a personal preference as to which one you think is the correct measurement?
I have absolutely no idea.
Felix, you want to take a gamble?
I have no idea either. I'm gonna side with the scientist on this one and say I have no idea.
Yeah. Sweet as well. We might move on to the next topic then here. We've got quite a controversial one with the human challenge trials being proposed for COVID-19 vaccines. I thought it would be good to start off by explaining kind of what human challenge trials are.
Yeah, so you may have heard this week the group in Oxford came up with some good, I think, stage one trials or something like that that looked promising for their COVID vaccine. And there's been several other groups that are at a similar stage with successful, potentially successful vaccines. But obviously there's a global interest in getting these vaccines ready and prepared and manufactured as quickly as possible. And one way to do that could be to actually use humans as guinea pigs and give humans COVID-19, full-on COVID-19, and then trial out different vaccine treatments. Mm. So this is a very difficult topic, because potentially you're giving someone a disease that could kill them. We don't have completely effective treatments for COVID-19. And ethicists are saying, you know, there's a lot of red flags here, and we really got to figure out, is this even ethical to do this? But on the other side, there is a large group of volunteers that are emerging that are willing to take part in this sort of human challenge in order to try and speed up the readiness of these vaccines. And so there's this advocacy group called One Day Sooner that has signed up more than 30,000 people from 140 countries. It's led by a 22-year-old who is herself willing to be part of this trial. They've organized an open letter that was signed by 15 Nobel laureates, another 100 other prominent researchers, and significantly the leader of the Oxford vaccine group, I guess, has also signed this. So they're pushing to try and do direct human trials. But on the other side, the World Health Organization is quite split over whether this should be a thing that we should try and do. And there's even disagreement whether the human challenges would actually speed up the vaccine effort. And that's not completely clear yet as well. But if it does go ahead, then it certainly shows that there are certainly people interested in putting themselves on the line. This is something that is done for other diseases, for malaria, and some other viruses. This is a way that people have trialed new vaccines, but the difference is in those cases we have effective treatments. In COVID-19, we do not yet.
Yeah, I think for me that was the quite big difference upon reading that.
Yeah.
And also the fact, I mean, these people are volunteers, but I'm concerned that given, I'm sure you're aware of the recent findings, that there may be some ongoing, even neurological problems from COVID-19. Can these people really be sure what the risk is that they're signing themselves up for?
They could be made aware of the risks, but this is not a simple illness. It is long-term complications are certainly emerging, and there's a proportion of people who get sick with this who are feeling the after effects many months after the original illness. And so there's this feeling that this is not, and this is not just the flu, this is not an insignificant risk. And perhaps we shouldn't be racing to, directly infect humans to try out these viruses. Mm-hmm.
Vaccines.
That's the word.
Yeah, and it is an interesting question about ethics, which isn't really so much a question that science can give us the answer to, but it's really going to be down to what we think as a society is acceptable risk to take.
Yeah, this is a big question. I mean, there's always going to be people who want to feel like they can lay themselves on the line and do this, but and we may save lives, but that's maybe not clear.
Sweet as. Well, we for the third story have another sort of COVID-related one about the universities in the United States in particular reopening, because they're in a bit of a different position to us, and students and professors alike are concerned about also once again the ethics of this. And I thought it was interesting that you chose this as your third article, as you are a lecturer yourself. So I kind of wanted to know your own feelings on this story.
Well, I've got quite a strong link with this, because I've only been here in New Zealand for a couple of years. I used to work in the States, and I'm getting emails from my old university saying that they are going to be opening in a few weeks, and they're coming up with all these plans and ways to deal with potential infection in the university and spread among students, but it's a sort of a troubling question, because I mean, in New Zealand we're in this little bubble. We don't, you know, we're sort of hopefully, touch wood, safe, and the universities are working as normal. But in the States, this is absolutely not the case, and all the universities, bar a very very few. Are going to be opening their doors, and they're going to be doing a mixture of in-person and online classes, and they're trying to bring in regulations on campus that will keep people safe or safer, like masks and things like that. But the problem is universities are not they need money to operate. They're fearing for their existence, really. As they move into the next semester, into the sort of the new academic year in the Northern Hemisphere, and these financial pressures are really pushing them to reopen, and so they're telling faculty that they have to be there, they have to be in front of a class of 20 to 200 or whatever students, ready to teach and put themselves on the line for their job, for their health on the line for their job, and this is really an ethical question, whether you can say, where you can mandate your employees to potentially put themselves into a dangerous sort of health situation, and there's a lot of troubling, there's a lot of objections from faculty, and I know several at my old university who are very worried about starting again, and you know, desperately trying to sort of find a way around the situation and sort of almost plead the university to just sort of slow down a wee bit and maybe keep teaching online for a bit longer until infection rates stop. But it, as you know, infection rates in the US are just accelerating right now.
Mm. Yeah, did you have any questions around this, Felix? Because it kind of relates to the international students topic you're going to be talking about later.
I think it's quite interesting how in New Zealand, even here, we are seeing universities like Waikato University who are still maintaining online teaching as at least an option. I think they have decided to do some in-person teaching. But it's strange to me that in the US, which still has coronavirus as such a major factor, that they're still putting these people in this situation where they have to
absolutely school. Absolutely. And it's... The problem for them is that there isn't really an end in sight, I think. I mean, here we had, you know, level 4 lockdown. It was 5 or 6 weeks, and people started to filter back in. And this coming semester, yeah, there are some universities here that are continuing with the online classes, but there isn't the community spread. There's nothing in that should really stop in-person classes. But in the US, you know, most of the second semester, I guess, of their academic year was lost. Much of the next semester will probably be lost, and who knows, it's going to 2021. And so all these universities are looking at a very very deep financial hole that they could be trying to dig themselves out of, even if it's possible to do that.
Well, thank you, Marcus. I think we better leave things here for today. But thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. That was Dear Science.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.